Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday,
1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you're listening to the interview with your host, Venger Satanis, and the Beast.
Thanks for calling in. My name's Beastino, and this is my co-host, Venger Satanis. Venger, how you doing today?
Time.
What's that?
I said you made it in the nick of time.
Yes, sir.
I pressed the button for you to... you know, be heard like 2 seconds before you, or 1 second before the music stopped. So I wasn't expecting you to jump on that right away, but there you go.
I try to do my best, and news is an important part of my life, so.
Yep. Well, I'm glad you could take the time out of your business schedule of beating women and ass-fucking girls and all the other cool stuff you do in your free time.
Well, you know, left-hand path is serious business, man.
Exactly, it is. So how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm running a little bit behind today. Obviously, as you said, I skated in just in the nick of time, and you know me, I'm usually 20 minutes ahead of time waiting for everything to...
Exactly.
Waiting for everything to come together, and... So I decided to play the role of Venger Satanis and slide into home base at the last second.
Nice.
Without the sweat of my brow.
Here. Yep.
What?
Yep. I was a little worried. I was like, oh, crap. Did something serious happen to him? And now I got to carry the whole show by myself? Shit.
Nah. But you would have no problems. I'm just here as kind of an enhancement, I guess.
Yeah. Well, for this show... you might not have as much input as you normally do, but sometimes it goes that way. We pick topics that, you know, we can't always be experts, the both of us, on. And this week's topic is on role-playing games. And
right.
You haven't role-played in a while, right?
Well, it depends on the type of role-play you're talking about, but as far as role-playing games go, no, I haven't played that since I was... I don't know, 19 years old.
Oh, well, that's not too long ago. I mean, it's not like you were 12. Well, tell us a little... Oh, and also, by the way, we very much encourage people to call into this show because, you know, it's more about subjective experiences rather than us, you know, handing down eldritch wisdom from our Emerald Tower. This show is all about... you know, the magic of role-playing games, you know, your own past experiences, your nostalgia, and the things you like, things you don't like. If you're playing games now, you know, hopefully you can call in and talk to us. That number is always on the front page of our Blog Talk Radio page, and it's 347-989-1371. And periodically, I'm going to try to look at the chat board. Okay, the Satanic Network is in. Go ahead, Beast, and talk about some of your experiences when you were 19 in role-playing.
Okay. Well, there was a certain group of people that I was hanging out with from about the age of 15 to 19. And, we used to indulge in psychedelic experiences, and then that led to the conversation of playing out an entire scenario of Dungeons & Dragons. I don't remember exactly what which edition or anything like that. It was a long time ago, at least in my mind. And it was rather enlightening. I mean, I think that the use of psychedelic enhancers definitely made it easier to fit into the part.
I think there are a lot of old school gamers that subscribe to that, and that probably maybe still play, on something, maybe mushrooms or some sort of hallucinogenic like LSD or perhaps the old fashioned pot. The actual birth of D&D is the year I was born, so it's pretty easy for me to remember, 1974. So it coming from that kind of mid-70s background, you can bet that there was some drugs in the works. Did you play intoxicated by some sort of magic herb?
Right. Mine was actually more of a chemical persuasion with the occasional hint of that magic herb.
Ah.
I thought it was really fascinating, and I gained a lot of respect for people who are really hardcore into it, because I found at times during the 4-week period, I found that got difficult to discern my own persona from the persona that I was playing, because I mean the games can last hours.
Yeah. I've heard of some hardcore sessions that have lasted like whole days.
Right. I mean, I don't think we ever went that far, but between, trying to catch the words to figure out, who was moving to what part next. And the actual playing out of it, it definitely was time consuming. About four of the guys that, I did this with, they would actually even dress the part. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that's commitment to a character, definitely.
Yeah, I thought, it certainly had a very mystical element to it, and honestly, the time required to enjoy it is why I stopped playing in the first place.
Yeah.
And just, I unfortunately literally rolled into adulthood with a plate full of responsibilities. And, I could no longer indulge in things like that. Nobody introduced me to it until I was 19 either. I had watched the cartoon and I knew that it was based off of a role-playing game, but, I never tried it.
Yeah. What do you remember about the cartoon?
I remember, that's really kind of tough. I remember a lot about the cartoon. I remember the characters actually within it all seemed to kind of come from a different, I don't want to say error, but they all seemed to come from a different paradigm.
Right.
And they kind of meshed together in this big push to stop, I think it was to stop Venger from wreaking havoc on this particular world or whatever it was. It was a long, long time ago that I saw that cartoon now, so.
Right, but yeah, but you still remember it pretty clearly. Venger was the force of evil in the realm of Dungeons & Dragons. So, in a way, he was like the devil or Satan in that world. And he wanted the items or the weapons of power that when combined in his grasp would give him pretty much ultimate control over the realm and basically make him God, I think. He was almost equal to the Dungeon Master, who, you could say was like, maybe some hybrid of Jehovah or Jesus Christ or something. And then there was Tiamat. Tiamat was like I don't know, he was like a third entity that was pretty much on par with Bender. And I don't know. That's kind of getting into a different territory. Although if someone wants to call in or ask about that on our little chat session here on the Ooze, that's fine and dandy too.
Absolutely. I'd love to get any input from anybody today. I mean, this is definitely something that I don't have too much experience about, and I'm really actually curious to find out, you know, how your experiences have been. You've gone as far as writing not one, but what, like two or three extension books?
I've been involved with role-playing games. Well, I'll just give you my brief history. I was always, from a young age, very interested in monsters and, you know, demons and robots, like swords and sorcery, any kind of fantasy, science fiction, and to some degree horror, even though scary things would scare the bejesus out of me when I was a youngster. So I was always attracted to that kind of stuff, you know, dungeons and darkness and, you know, dragons and devils and demons and things like that. All that was, like,
right. So
right up my alley. And one of my aunts knew that about me and my cousin Todd, who had a similar inclination, and she bought both of us, like, different basic D&D role-playing box sets. So we had those, and we tried to read them and play together. I think I was like 10 and he was 12. So he had a slightly better grasp of what was going on. We had never played, so we didn't really know how to play. And then it was a couple years into grade school that I found some other friends. One in particular, I had an older brother who was really into D&D. He had a lot of the different books, so we kind of learned from him, and then other kids in junior high and then high school. I branched out from D&D to Teenage Mutant Ninjas and other strangeness, things like Battletech and Robotech, different superhero games like Marvel and DC, the basic first Star Wars role-playing game, that was cool, and eventually that sort of spilled over into the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game, which was one of the big ones early on and is still put out by Chaosium, that role-playing game company. And, of course, that, you know, led into a whole new paradigm of role-playing game and, you know, different, you know, then I got involved in the Cthulhu mythos as well. That took a different turn, but it was cool role-playing in that age. The artwork from D&D and all the early games really inspired me, and I don't know, it kind of took me and my imagination to, like, a different place, and that was part of the coolness. And I still play. I haven't role-played in about a year, but now I'm getting back to it again. If anyone has seen that video in our new channel on YouTube called The Icker, I talk about the Pathfinder role-playing game, which is basically like D&D 3.75 to keep up with things. So I'm getting back into it, and it's very cool. It does take up a lot of time. You know, it's kind of a time and money consuming hobby, especially if you get really into it. But I think it's rewarding enough to do that, and for me it's fun. So anyway, Carla, are you still there?
That's me. How you guys doing?
Yeah,
oh, awesome.
Good.
Hey, it's Zach. I finally made it up early enough to call in here.
Awesome.
Wow. What,
so how you guys
probably
doing?
Didn't go to bed.
I did for a little bit.
I'm good. I believe same for Venger.
Cool.
Yep. Doing good.
So you guys actually got into the whole D&D magic stuff. Like, you guys ever get into the magic card game, stuff like that, too?
Now, I did get into Magic the Gathering, the card game, yes, but D&D, I only had a really brief stint with it myself.
Okay.
I never really got into the card game. I think I only played it twice. However, about 4 years ago, there was a Call of Cthulhu collectible card game, and that only lasted like 2 years, unfortunately. But I was really super into that, and that came, I don't know, it was longer than that, because that kind of indirectly influenced me to start the Cthulhu cult, because
cool.
We were playing the card game like so often that I was just inundated with different references and artwork and images and storylines of the mythos. And I, you know, that was a period of time when, I don't know, a lot of things were in flux and I was taking a different direction in life. But anyway, that's a cool card game. Probably no one has played it because it only lasted like 2 years. But yeah, never really played Magic the Gathering. What about you, Zach? What's your gaming experience like?
Well, you know, I was fortunate enough to spend most of my teens on the beach in San Diego, so I spent most of my time on the beach surfing, so I never really got into role-playing games that much, with the exception of in my late teens. Still too young to drink, so I didn't have a hobby, really. But we would play this Vampire Masquerade game, and it was kind of a role-playing game with live people throughout the whole city. You know, this was before the internet, too, really, or before it got really up and running, so. And that was kind of cool, you know, it was kind of... There was some sex involved. There was, you know, some mystery involved. It was kind of fun. That lasted for a couple of years.
Cool.
So kind of fun lasts a couple of years. How long does real fun last?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of, you know, I mean, in retrospect, it was kind of silly. But like I said, we're too young to drink and didn't have a lot to do in Phoenix. So it was kind of... We would just you know, dress up in our vampire lore, our goth suits, and cruise the city, you know, and virtual battle other clans and take their women and stuff, and it was cool.
Yeah.
It was kind of a BDSM type role playing thing too. Yeah, I mean, the girls were really into it, which makes it easy to be into it too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think at that point in time, I would probably say, where do I sign?
Yeah, I mean, about the only game that I really play anymore is chess with Beastier.
Oh, yeah, I've heard you guys have had some good matches.
Yeah, we have.
I've never actually gotten to ask you, were you part of the chess club in high school? Because you're very classical in your methodology in playing.
Actually, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. I did take, just for one semester, I took chess in high school. But how I learned was when I was in San Diego at a coffee shop that I used to hang out at, this guy used to play blindfolded. And he just called out, like, you know, rook to E2 or whatever. And he would basically almost beat, you know, 9 out of 10 times he'd beat anybody playing blindfolded. And he taught me how to play and kind of the strategies and the opening moves and stuff like that. And just kind of went from there.
Wow.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, because you've given me quite a challenge, and usually people who have, a classic understanding of it are usually pretty easy for me to trump.
Yeah, so, I mean, I know you notice I usually tend to open with the same moves, you know,
right.
Pawn forward and the knights, you know. You know, my whole strategy has generally just always been to try to get control of the center, pull off the pieces, the big boys, and then castle, and then go from there.
Right. Where do you think I'd throw you off at?
You do some unpredictable stuff sometimes where, usually you start as black, but sometimes you'll pull out some pawns, and I notice that, like, I like to try to pin your knight against your queen or your king with my bishop, and you've been preventing that by pulling out those corner pawns so that I can't do that. That throws
right.
me off. I don't play well against knights, so I try to take them out as soon as I can. And I think you figured that out. So you have me at a disadvantage if you take my knights, because those are what I try to play with. So, what about you, Vinger? Do you you play chess?
I know how to play, and I played once a few months ago with this girl, and. She beat me. And then, but before that, I haven't played in years. But I do still know how. I can play sometime if you guys want to get a charge out of just literally kicking my ass, you could do that. And make yourself feel better, like, yeah, B93 Sandra Satanas, he sucks.
You know what's funny is if you go to this, there's this chess site, it's called chess.com, and you register and you play people live all over the world, right? And it's kind of cool because when you win, you get, like, rated, you get points and stuff, and so that you can like, play other people with similar ratings so that it's not too one-sided. But that's kind of a humbling experience, man, to get your ass kicked by some, like, 10-year-old Korean girl, like, up and down. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Bullshit.
Well, I've got a lot of experience with that. I like to play Texas Hold'em, and sometimes I play online. Actually, Jason King, we were talking about that on the Cthulhu forum, that... you know, that we both play occasionally on PokerStars, and that sometimes maybe we could sit at the same table and play.
That's
but
cool.
Yeah, I'm used to getting schooled a lot, so by 10-year-olds and people that can't even speak English.
Yeah, you know, I always try to keep myself humble because there's always somebody out there that can just stomp the shit out of you. You know.
Yeah. Exactly.
No, but Beast and I are pretty evenly matched. We go back and forth, so it's entertaining. It's never all
it is.
It's never too one-sided where it gets boring for one or the other. It's basically who's going to fuck up first, and then the other person capitalizes on it, and that's pretty much it.
Right. Well, I would play just for the fun of it sometime. Yeah. That would be very cool. Yeah.
Yeah, well, get my Yahoo Messenger from Beast there, or vice versa, or whatever, and we can play.
Yeah.
Sweet. That would work definitely. I mean, we could probably even arrange a time to open a room in the actual chess section of Yahoo and invite everybody out to challenge us.
Yeah, you know, I wonder if multiple people can watch that same game or if it's just the two people playing. We'll have to figure that out.
I think there's a chat function that people can, like, talk back and forth as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's where the game actually... the private messenger version, I don't know that anybody else can watch it, but if we actually log into the chess section of Yahoo, then there's a forum where they can all sit in the room and watch the game. And
that's cool. I didn't know that. That's awesome.
That is cool. Yeah, maybe we could set something like that up. That'd be pretty cool.
So when you guys were talking about role-playing games, were you talking about, like, any games, or were you talking about, like, more, like, typical... D&D type games, stuff like that?
Well, we started out with the more typical, but, I mean, I don't know. With the U's, it's pretty much anything goes. As soon as we get off topic, and we like that a little bit better, where we just start talking about something, you know, we don't always have to go back to the original topic.
Gotcha. You guys remember Doom on computer?
Yes.
Doom and Duke Nukem?
Doom
and Duke Nukem?
They were awesome games, actually.
Oh, man,
I was hooked on both of them.
Me too.
I played it a little, but not that much. This is a game, a role-playing game, that I really loved when I was, how young was I? Probably around 10 or 12, like when I first started getting into D&D. It's called The Bard's Tale, and it was for, like, the Commodore 64 computer. But it was really cool. For me, it was, like, the first cool, like, ongoing role-playing game where you could, like, roll up characters like a monk or a fighter or a ranger or a spellcaster or something. And then you go around the city, and then underneath the city there were, like, the catacombs. You'd fight monsters, and you'd collect treasure and experience, and you'd slowly level up, and then you could beat, like, harder things. And there was magic everywhere and weird stuff. It was, like, a super great game. I played it for years. I played with some people that I knew, like, around the neighborhood, but hardly anybody has ever heard of that. Have you guys ever heard of The Bard's Tale?
No, I haven't.
No.
Okay. Yeah.
No, I was fortunate enough to be blessed with a surfboard and good looks. I didn't have to get into that shit.
See, that's something else I wanted to bring up. That I've heard that, like, every hour of D&D that you play or other role-playing game, basically takes or adds like another 10 minutes on your virginity or something like that.
there's
definitely a connection between, you know, being that kind of gamer geek and nerd and like that kind of into the role-playing games and like not really being good with women. Like, it's like if you realize that at your young age that you're like, you know, proficient with the art of romance or something, then it's like, who needs, you know, little plastic figures? And,
right. Why sit with a bunch of pimply face other, you know, teenagers and play D&D
right.
when I could go, you know, try to get laid or something, be productive.
Exactly.
Oh, shit.
Another friend who's coming over later today to play, he was over at another friend's house. This was years and years ago in high school. And one of the kids' dads, whoever the house they were playing at, his dad came home and he's like, listening to them like talk about their elf wizard, like, you know, trying to cast a fireball or something. And he was just like, why don't you guys try to go out and get laid?
That's good fatherly advice, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I was either blessed or cursed, however you want to look at it, with being an extremely late developer in that regard, with women. And so it basically allowed me to mature my geek side and my love for, you know, Doctor Who and D&D and even Risk, and I don't know what else. So, yeah, I didn't really get into girls. Oh, I was very into girls, like in high school and all that, even earlier. But
just weren't successful.
What's that?
You just weren't successful at an early age, is what you're saying?
I mean, I was so, it's not even like I was trying and unsuccessful. I just, like, wasn't even at the point where I was trying to talk to girls. I was just so, I don't know, shy and intimidated and not confident. And I mean, I'm an only child, so I didn't have any, like, older or even younger siblings to sort of guide me. My parents didn't really guide me, and my friends were also geeks or in, like, advanced placement physics classes and had no hope of getting a girlfriend either. So I just basically let that world go until college. And even then, when I tried, of course, in college, I would occasionally get shot down because I had no idea what I was doing, because all the training here in high school, I just was sitting around a table with my dice, you know, playing with myself, so to speak.
Yeah, dice is a good game. I like craps. You guys play craps?
Yeah, actually.
So.
I enjoy that. Dollar hand, you know?
Yeah, that's good stuff.
That is fun. Passes the time.
I actually had a question for you, Derek. When you when you first started trying to approach women, I mean, did you find that you were, you know, trying to rely on your experiences in D&D as conversation pieces, or, I mean, because I can imagine why you failed if you're talking about your fireball.
When it happened that I was, for some reason, like, in a conversation with a girl back then, it was, I tried to talk about the things that I like. You know, I tried to talk about, you know, Tom Baker and my Vorpal Sword, and I was really into comic books and video games. So I would talk about, you know, the Uncanny X-Men and, like, Pitfall and, you know, or Ghosts and Goblins or something. And it's just things that girls, especially at that age, had no idea about. So it was like I was speaking a completely different language. And
yeah, that's kind of girl repellent, you know? I mean,
yeah, totally. At least it was back then. I think now we've progressed as a society where, you know, where girls are more in touch with that sort of thing, and it's a little bit cooler, you know, because cool guys and bands play a lot of video games and role-playing games.
Well, you know, it's interesting.
It's a different world now.
It's interesting to notice that most, you know, females aren't into role-playing games or games in general. I mean, there's exceptions, but, you know, I'd say 90% of your gamers and, you know, are men, which kind of makes it a lonely state if that's your main social outlet.
Yeah, exactly. So, of course, now you have the internet, so it's a little different.
Right.
It's probably a little easier.
Right.
But back
Thank God for the internet.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what I would have talked to about with a girl back then. Like, so, how did you like the history lecture today?
Huh.
I don't know. I mean, what would I have talked about?
You know, I
had no game whatsoever. So it was just like, I might as well have tried to converse with the wall. Hope to get better results.
When I first... Go ahead, Beast.
I was going to say, when I was first experimenting with communicating with women, I made the decision that by not saying anything at all, I would have a better chance of getting into a good conversation, because women naturally seem to always be talking whenever I watch them. So for a long time, all the girls that, I was around, they all were, they all thought I was just like silent type. And that really worked for me very well.
Yeah, you can pull that off and it seems cool. When I ever tried to do that, it was like creepy. Probably because I was looking at them like, like some anthropologist was like trying to study some weird, like, tribe in, in South America or some of that. Like, I'd never seen human beings before, or people from America or something. I was watching them and I was like, I don't understand anything that's happening or that's coming out of their mouths, or like their whole behavior is just weird to me.
Well, there's a fine line between being mysterious and being creepy. And
exactly.
It's hard to figure out how to, which side to stand on sometimes. I was blessed. My sexual development started early, about the age of 14. I was blessed with this magic potion. It was called marijuana. And that dissipated my anxiety and, attracted, women that were more of a promiscuous or adventurous nature, so if you want to call it that.
Actually, there was just a study in, I think, in Australia, where they did, like, the sexual relationships and number of partners and promiscuity with men and women that were, like, smoked pot on a regular basis or something. And with women, it, like, soars up, So, yeah, I can see where that would help.
It helps to break the ice a little bit, if you don't really have anything to say, hey, hit this,
Yeah, that's going over here or something, yeah.
And that line is usually followed with, hit this while I'm hitting that.
Ideally, yeah. You hit on both
ideally,
ends.
Ideally, yeah. But, in all actuality, I mean, I don't really think that either is an undesirable path to take. I mean, you look at where Venger is right now. I mean, he's got women in Venezuela and other weird countries that are like asking him if they can come here and marry him.
Nice.
Yep.
Yeah.
All those Venezuelan women. Yeah.
Little slice of rice. That's awesome.
See, I'm one of those people that don't have the natural game. And so basically, and Beast and I have talked about this before a lot. So what I did after I graduated from college, because I still wasn't much farther than square one, is I studied it. I studied it like some people study for, the bar exam or something else that they really want to study hard, like how to get further in World of Warcraft or something, if there's like World of Warcraft for Dummies or something. So I studied books like that on, how to be in relationships and seduce women and talk to women and be more comfortable in that stuff. So, I became like a dating nerd, I guess. And I just did whatever the books told me to, like, again and again and again. And finally I got good. And then I got really, really good. Like, scary good. Like, textbook, moves that I had sort of made a part of myself and a part of my own game and personality and stuff.
Well,
so then things were coming really well. And then I got into my long-term relationship. And that kind of put the kibosh on that for the most part. And now I'm single again, and I do pretty well, but...
Yeah, the proof is in the pudding, pun intended, and it's when you're in a long-term relationship, sometimes, you kind of forget how to play that game, the courting rituals and the process of attraction and stuff like that. I was in a long-term relationship for 9 years too, and I just recently got out like 2 years ago, and I had like no game for like a year. It took me a while to get back on the horse and figure out what the fuck I was doing. I found that for me it was like important to find a situation or an environment that I'm comfortable in.
Yeah.
And I would like to choose like bars because, you know, alcohol loosens the inhibitions, people are more friendly, they're sociable, you know. And then I kind of got back on the horse that way, but.
That's good.
But by no means do I have women in Venezuela, so. I think I got a couple in Germany, but if you want to trade, I could take, I need some Latinos, so I'll give you some Aryans.
Yeah. Well, hey, the more that we do this show and the other things in the cult and Left Hand Path and YouTube and whatever, the more desirable we get, I guess, the more sexy women will find us. And then who knows? We'll come out of Germany and Venezuela, and next maybe Canada. I mean, hey, the sky's the limit.
That's true. And you're not too far from Canada.
Yeah, yeah. Canada is just like practically my next door neighbor.
That's cool.
Yeah, I don't know if I could tolerate the A's.
Yeah, eh?
Eh? Yeah. Oh, it makes me nuts when I hear it. I mean, I living in Florida, we get a lot of Canadian tourists. And, there's a couple of things that I've noticed. Canadians are extremely frugal, and they like to disagree about the price. I've also noticed that. It's my favorite. You know, and they always, for some reason, think that I have a magic wand and I can just, like, tap the merchandise and make it $20 cheaper.
Oh, that would be nice.
So once we get to the point and we've established that the price is not going to change, well, then they try to pay me in Canadian money.
Yeah,
which I think currently isn't such a bad thing, but at one point in time it was like you were losing 40%. So.
Oh, my God. Well, see, it's so hot in Florida that they probably think that it's the same as, like, the Dominican Republic or someplace like that. And then, so they're like, oh, well, these people like to barter, and the price isn't actually the price, and whatever.
Yeah, it's like, this ain't goddamn Tijuana now. Listen up.
So I have a good time, though, with it anymore. I mean, it's not that I dislike them. It just gets frustrating, you know.
Yeah.
Especially when I'm trying to quickly move on to the next task, or I'm working on a post for the forum, or there's something else I'm doing. I'm just one of those people that's always working on something, and even though it doesn't always surface on an end where you guys see it, and there's stuff constantly being put out. So.
Sure. Here's a question that's kind of off the beaten track. Zach, I was wondering, are you any kind of artist, or do you do any art or creative work, or, you know, anything from, like, writing or painting or, you know, sculpting or something like that?
Actually, you know, I used to do a lot of artwork, not so much painting, but more like freehand sketching with pencils and colored pencils, stuff like that, charcoal.
Okay.
I haven't done it for several years. I just kind of got into a funk where, you know, my relationship split up. It was just kind of like, I just kind of lost interest in stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, I do occasionally, but rarely at this point.
Okay, cool.
How about you? Do you do anything?
Both. And that's one of the things that brought us together. Both BCNO and I. Yeah, we're kind of creative animals. You know, we write, we paint. Occasionally we draw or do other stuff. And I know exactly what you mean about, you know, kind of being in a funk and putting that kind of thing aside. When my big relationship broke up, I kind of lost my muse, and I stopped painting and doing a lot of stuff for several months before I really got back into the groove. And lately I've been back on a painting spin. And writing, like creative writing, short stories and stuff. So it's all good again. But, yeah, women can do that for the lack thereof.
Cool, man. You should post some of your paintings on YouTube, make some videos of them, show them off or something. Do you have them? Do you post them on the Cult of Cthulhu website or?
Where do I?
I mean,
I post them on the. I said a couple new ones. I posted on the blog. Cthulhu.com.
Right. I was just going to say that.
Okay. But you can get there from cultofcthulhu.net too. There's a drop-down menu on the right-hand side. I can't remember what it's called. But yeah, I do that. People say when they come over, usually girls, they come over. But also my trusty manservant, also, he raves and raves about my painting. Like, oh, you should, like, show these or have, you know, an exhibit or, you know, or try to sell them and stuff. And that's a great idea, but... I don't know, it takes a lot of time and whatever.
Well, when you say manservant, are you talking about that dude from YouTube? That's your admirer?
Yeah, on YouTube. He's not on YouTube, but I mentioned him like in the comment to you.
Oh, okay. Because
yeah.
Somebody hit me up from your website, some weirdo, you know, some dude asking how big my dick was and stuff like that.
Oh, no, it wasn't that guy.
Oh, it's not that guy? Okay.
It's not that guy.
No. All right. But he came from your website, so. Or not your website, but your YouTube, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'll try to dig him up
maybe
in my messages.
Maybe that's the person that hacked into my old account, or I don't know. Or was it from the Icker?
No, it was from your old account. This is like.
Okay.
Well, you know what? I don't remember, actually, to tell you the truth. I'm not sure exactly where he came from, but he mentioned your name. And one of you guys said that he had a crush on me or something, right?
Yeah. But he knows you. I told him that you're straight, and it was just kind of funny.
No, it was funny.
But
I mean,
was like, oh, hey, who's that guy? I'm like, oh, that's Zach from Satanic International. And, you know, we had him on the Ooze, and we talked to him, and he's a cool guy. And he was like, oh, yeah, that guy's hot and stuff. You know, it wasn't. I don't think he'd come on and be like, oh, my God, you know, and, like, try to talk dirty to you. That would just be weird.
No, I mean, I wasn't offended.
Was
I mean, like,
right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was fun. It's just, he just got a, you know, a little personal, but I don't give a shit. Whatever. It's all fun game.
That's funny. I've been put in that situation myself a lot, and, you know, personally... completely comfortable in myself and in my own sexuality. So it doesn't usually tend to bother me, but there has been that once or twice where, you know, the questions are just way too prying, you know, and I feel like I'm being looked at like, I don't know, a slice of pizza when a bum's standing next to it.
Now you know how women feel.
I know.
Right.
I was just going to say that.
That was a little bit uncomfortable, but for the most part, you know, you can simply right. explain, hey, I got no problem with the fact that you are, but I am not.
Right.
Yeah,
I try to
be
flat, but
with gay men, I actually get along really well with gay men, you know, and I actually wish I was gay. I think it'd make my life a lot less complicated, you know.
Probably
I mean. Not. But I can't get past the dick, and I can't get past the stubble and the ass. So,
oh, sure.
Yeah, you know, it's just, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, women are too hot in order to forsake that.
All right, Zach, I'm going to put you on the spot for a second. I'm sorry,
sure.
man, but what if it was a post-op?
No way.
No way. Still
no
way.
Nope, no ways.
Complete transformer and no way.
Nope, I wouldn't do it. Now, if I didn't know about it, you know, give me some tequila and a roofie maybe, but, you know.
All right, so...
I wouldn't pursue it. I would not pursue it if I knew it, so... It's,
all right, I'm just curious.
You know what, I'll tell you, I mean, I've experimented in back in my goth days, you know, whenever it was fashionable to be kind of bisexual or whatever. Yeah, I tried not actual sex, but, you know, blowjobs, whatever, from other dudes, whatever. And it's just, I can't get past two things, mainly the dick and the facial hair. You know, I can't suspend disbelief if you have a dick and you have a beard. You know, it's just, you know, I don't care how much lipstick you put on, it just doesn't work.
What is your type of woman, Beth? What type of women do you usually go for, or do you like, or search for on the porn side, whatever?
Sure, yeah. I generally navigate towards petite women. My rule of thumb is, you know, they got to be smaller than me. And I'm not that big. I'm 5'10", 170. So that gives a little breathing room. But I personally like small girls, like who are like 5'3", 5'4", 110 pounds, 120. The kind you can throw around and bounce around a little bit, you know, without spraining your arm or spilling your beer. You know, I mean, that's kind of...
Sure.
That's, you know, that's what I like. I like Asians. I like tattoos and piercings. I don't really have any, like, real specific fetishes, like, that are... You know, that are like really ingrained. I mean, I like to get women off, and that's what turns me on. So, but I generally navigate towards petite women, and I prefer ones that are brunettes and dark hair, because I always end up with blondes, and they always burn me. So I'm just like, I don't know.
Yeah, I actually, I know that feeling, man, because I have the exact same issue.
With blondes?
Yeah, they always end up burning you. It's ridiculous.
And I always get them, too. I get the fucking, the busty ones, the fucking Playboy blondes, and they always fucking rip me fucking a new one. And so then when I fucking, you know, can score upon, you know, Latino or something of color a little bit, then I'm just like, wow.
Yeah.
It's kind of a cultural thing, too, so.
Like the opposite kind that we're into sometimes, those are the ones that, you know, come after us or, you know, make it easy on us or, like, hit on us or whatever. See, my type is more like the voluptuous blonde type. And except for a couple times, you know, I never seem to get that. I always get, it's pretty easy to get bigger-sized women, if, you know, if it comes to that. But I usually get, like, dark or red-haired girls, and, you know, sometimes thin, sometimes small boobs. I don't know. But I like the more, you know, full-figured, blonde kind of...
Kind of like for the Jay Mansfield type build, the voluptuous blonde.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's hard not to like, right?
Yeah, it is.
No, but would you prefer a woman who's, you know, of... Oh, it's highway proportional, who's voluptuous, as opposed to one that's petite and thin? I mean, do you like some meat on there? I mean, is that what you go for?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I prefer the more full-figured. Even if it's proportioned to her, hopefully, you know, giant boobs, I prefer, you know, kind of more on the chunky side. Just because I like, you know, the cushion that goes along with the pushing, and you know, something to grab a hold on to, and it's just probably because it's different than me. It's the opposite of me, because I've always been pretty thin and lean and long and you know, lanky when I was growing up. So, you know, that's probably why I like the opposite type of me.
Well, you know, I have a theory about, like, what develops our fetishes, like your first sexual experiences and your first, you know, things generally seem to kind of solidify your fetishes. Like for me, because I started having sex early at 14, the women that I was having sex, well, the girls that I was having sex with were 14 too, around, right? And so they're, you know, going to be naturally more petite than, you know, if you started having sex later in life when women are more, you know, fulfilled and busty and whatever. And so I think that just kind of solidified my fetishes at that point. And it kind of stuck.
I think that's a good observation.
Yeah, I think there's some validity to that.
Yeah, I mean, especially since my type of woman is more in line with Zach's here, you know, dark hair, dark eyes.
Right.
I like them up to about 5'7". After that, no way.
Yeah, me too.
you know, the petite ones, the slender ones. I like smaller breasts and fuller asses. But my first girlfriend was fit, the first girl I was sexually active with fit in that category. She was 5 foot, you know, small B cup, nice full butt. So I can definitely say that I'm supporting evidence to your theory.
You still have her number? No.
I wish, man.
Yeah, but no, I think there's something to that. That's, you know, when you have your first sexual gratifying experiences with a certain type of woman, I think that has that kind of dictates your pattern of what you look for physically to be attracted towards. And I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, I mean, it's I like them all shapes and sizes. But if I'm gonna go for something, if I can pick and choose, that's what I'm gonna go for.
Right. Well, it's all about the picking and the choosing.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
If we want to get to.
So
that's the goal.
So, Zach, you sound like you're doing much better, man.
Oh yeah, how so?
Well, last time I actually talked to you, you were just getting over pneumonia. So.
Yes, I still have it actually, but it's a lot better. I dialed back on the partying and whatever last week. You know, taking the antibiotics, because if you drink with the antibiotics, they don't work. And it's,
right.
Yeah, so. Getting there.
Well,
yeah.
I'm sorry I haven't been present for chess. I've been kind of occupied the past few days.
Oh, yeah?
So,
you got something
in
mind?
I looked up a girl that I knew for a short period of time in high school and ended up meeting up with her and well, we've been having a real good time together, so.
Awesome, man. Awesome.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the best thing you can do for your soul, you know?
Yeah.
For sure.
I think so.
I do, too.
Especially since she is interested in seeing exactly how deep and dark the corners are in my mind, and that really works for me.
Nice.
Yeah, your corners are pretty deep, man. So hopefully she doesn't get too lost in them.
Well, you know, also I noticed that people who have a preference towards petite women, especially of foreign, you know, development or whatever, they those men generally tend to be the ones that want to be the dominant role in the relationship, which I like to be.
Right.
So, which is one of the reasons probably why I don't want a woman that's bigger than me. You know, because. Yeah, it just feels awkward, you know. You mean you kind of want to – I like that traditional role of being the dominant one, the male, the provider, the, you know. That's
disciplinary,
just,
yeah.
Exactly. And that's a lot of reasons why I like Latino women, because the culture is kind of a male-dominant thing, you know. Not to be abusive, but just that's that role, you know. That's
right.
Kind of what I look for. So.
Well, do you think that the smaller women, like things rougher and like to be dominated, or do you think it's just all the way across the board, or doesn't have anything to do with body shape and size? It's just some girls like that, some girls don't, or?
Well, my personal experience is, you know, it's been, I haven't been able to label it as if they're petite, as like the submissive role. It's just basically been, you know, all shapes and sizes. They have their personal things, and I haven't been able to identify by body shape, but myself,
yeah, I don't think that it qualifies by body shape at all. I think that it qualifies by first male role.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
If daddy was a bit of an asshole, then that's what she gravitates towards.
Mm-hmm. So. You guys ever notice, like, the ones that are best in bed are usually the craziest? That always upsets me.
Oh, absolutely.
When I find a great lover in bed, it's like she's a fucking whore, you know, emotionally. And it's
right.
I can't find a balance. And then when I find one that I get along with great emotionally, who's stable, she's horrible in bed. And I lose interest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been throwing toasters, knives. I've had to duck objects I never thought I would have to duck. So I completely agree with you on that, too.
Oh, shit, you ducked him? Shit, I didn't ever duck him. I just took him.
You're damn right I ducked, man. I'm not getting it. What's that? Benja?
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever had a woman throw shit at me. I don't think so. I mean, I've had women were pissed off, but
you got all the psycho ones that throw shit at you, call the cops on you, send you to jail, you know. That'll give you a different perspective on love.
I've never had that. Mm. I've been outright slapped once.
Oh, that's it?
Oh, shit, that happens every time I stick my finger in their ass, man. I get slapped, but, you know.
That's part of playtime, as far as I'm concerned.
I consider that foreplay.
Yeah. But see, I have an inability to get under women's skin. And I didn't even mean to do it. It's just, it happens.
Yeah.
And I piss them off and drive them crazy. If they weren't psycho prior to coming into the relationship, they will be psycho leaving.
Mm, wow. Nice. Easy, you know, everybody. Women, hold your applause. So ask the show.
I mean, it's really not an intentional thing, but, you know, I have a few rules of thumb. I'm not going to lie to myself, and I'm not going to lie to you, and, well, women tend to do both.
Yes. You know what I mean? It's three males talking, so we can, you know, it's kind of unfair to sit here and diss on the opposite sex, but, I mean, my personal experience is that women can be more malicious and hurtful, and it's particularly spiteful than men. Like, here's an example. If a man cheats on a woman, it's generally because he's lustful and it's an opportunistic. If a woman cheats on a man, it's generally because she wants to hurt her lover. You know, that's been my experience. Because most women can go into any bar and get laid, right? They can do what, you know, they can pretty much have any guy they want because guys are opportunistic. But if they choose to do that, it's generally to spite and to hurt their partner as opposed to just, oh, I was drunk and want to get laid.
Right. Well, I think we should clarify here that these are just, you know, our observations and not necessarily facts, and we're cognizant of that fact.
True. These are our personal experiences. This isn't,
So how women should feel free to come out of the woodwork and show us differently and
exactly.
Take us out, buy us dinner, and then show us, you know, what they got, the real stuff.
That's right. We're all over the country. West Coast, Florida, North, Midwest, wherever, Minnesota, right? Venture?
Wisconsin. Coastal.
Oh, Wisconsin, sorry.
Well, I've
seen Jeffrey Dahmer and plenty of other serial killers.
Yeah, you know what? Here's a suggestion for you guys for your next show. I think it'd be cool to talk about serial killers. I mean, we could take up an hour talking about serial killers.
One of my favorite subjects. So.
Maybe I'll do a show tomorrow talking about serial killers.
Cool. All right, if you do, let me know. I'll co-host.
Okay, cool. Maybe maybe tomorrow. A little early here for me, but, you know, maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 your time?
4 or 5 my time? How about six my time, and then we'll be good.
Okay, cool. So that'll be about 3 my time. Yeah, that'll work. I'll be up by then.
All right.
I'm in no condition to talk anyway, so. No, but, yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah, I'd love to get a show about serial killers, the fascination people have with them and why and stuff and the motives. And I have a personal fascination with them. You know, I mean, I just how somebody could just fucking click and just look at people as, you know, targets and not care about. I mean, there's a lot of interesting topics to bring up there.
Yeah. I just watched Slumber Party Massacre. First time last night, and it was really, really good. It was probably better than it should have been. I liked it a lot more than I thought I would. I got it for like $5. That's why I bought it and finally watched it. But one of the things that was particularly cool is the killer. You didn't hear anything from him until the end, and then at the end, the shit he was saying and the way he acted it, it was great because he brought across the craziness that a person who does that kind of thing would have. You know, there's just a mental imbalance. I think that in itself is fascinating, like how the human mind can become warped to such a degree where people just go out and kill and maybe they don't find anything wrong with it, or it's just they get off on it, or they feel like they need to do it, they're compelled to somehow, or they have their own weird twisted reasons that don't make any logical sense to us, but for them it's perfectly logical and natural. So
I tend to think that what happens is an objectification of people rather than a subjectification. You begin to believe that you're completely different than everyone else around you, and I mean completely different and sharing no common traits at all.
Yeah, when outsiders go wild.
But that's just my quick take. For the rest of it, check out the Satanic International show tomorrow.
Cool. Well, thanks, guys. Been a good
show. Thank you. All right, cool.
Is it over?
yeah, we got like a couple seconds left. So.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, pretty much.
Awesome.
Hey, TC, can you call me on my landline? I want to talk to you. I looked at your website, and I want some. I have some questions about how to develop my own that I want to run by you off the air. So, cool.
All right, I'll give you a shot, man.
All right, guys. Take it easy, Derek.
Yep. See you, Zach.
Later.